the last thing you want to do is be alone with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Scary movies have taught us nothing. Don't ever be alone. Right?
Don't ever go into the woods alone. Yeah. Right? Don't go down in the basement alone.
Don't split up.
Right. Don't do it. Right? You're like, we know it's gonna take them out. Right? Yeah. Well, in the same way, right, I think about trust-based relational intervention, the idea of like sticking together.
Welcome to the Family Care Learning Podcast. And over the next couple podcasts, Brandon and I are going to be talking about some spooky topics. Don't worry. We're still going to be family friendly. We're still going to tell you, but we're close to Halloween. And I personally like the holiday. I like dressing up and I like candy. And so I thought, what an interesting opportunity to maybe talk about some of those spookier topics within foster care and adoption. So like I said, I have a good friend, the only guy I know that has a certification in some kind of deprivation training to join us. Before we get into your credentials, Brandon, what's your take on Halloween? Do you guys get into it? Did you like it as a kid? What was up?
Yeah, you know, I think my kids love getting the candy, and I feel like it's one of those times where it's socially acceptable for like all the neighbors to kind of come out and like you're peeking in their garages and making friends. And so all the family members that are like super social love it. Yeah. And then you're like eating candy. So yeah.
Do you dress up with your kids?
It's always one of those things that's like, I'm willing to, but we got to hit it out of the park.
Okay.
And then usually it fizzles out by the time the night comes. I don't know. What about you? Okay. You dress up?
Oh yeah. 100%. Do you? Yeah. 100%? Like I said, we get into it. Sometimes it's been a couple years since we've done like themed ones.
Okay.
Like I think one year we were all pirates or something. Mm-hmm. Last year we all kind of picked our favorite thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So this year I've got a plan.
You got a plan already?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So you are a bit of a planner when it comes to this.
Yes.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Homemade or like I'm gonna go buy something
as low of a budget as I can. So last year I was blessings in disguise, where I just put like a fake nose and mustache on, and then I just like pulled up a hoodie and I printed out like a big name tag that said like, "Hello, my name is Blessings."
Oh.
So. Yeah. So okay. That, that's yeah. Good. So I think that costs like $5, whatever the nose and glasses were. But yeah, I get.
Okay.
I'm into any excuse to dress ridiculously, I'm happy to partake in. So
nice. Yeah. I just went as an exhausted father that last week or last year.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. See, that works. Yeah. I think my wife did that. I think she like put like dark, whatever, like she like smudged some of her mascara or whatever. And, yeah, she wore a robe and was just like,
there you go. Yeah.
COVID mom or something. Yeah. So, yeah. So, yeah, we have fun.
Good times.
Yeah. So, Brandon, today we're going to talk about our first topic in this is this idea of living with ghosts.
All right.
And again, we're not going to talk about actual ghosts or whether any, it's not going to get paranormal.
Okay. That's good.
I wanted to kick this off with a quote from a book that I've found incredibly helpful. I think if you are a professional, if you are an adoptive person or family, if you've are in foster care or foster family, the book Seven Core Issues in Adoption and Permanency by, and I wrote it down here so I get it correct, Sharon Kaplan Rozea and Allison Davis Maxson. It was recommended to me by a consultant that we have in the work that we do here. But she said, "Will, this should be your guys' Bible." And I was like, "Look, you're talking to a bunch of Christians. So what exactly, like, that's a big deal to us."
Yeah.
And she was totally right. So, but basically this gives a good framework for people like myself who aren't necessarily like clinically trained or anything. They just are in this world and they have a lot of want to and a lot of desire. They give you seven core issues and how those issues play out in kind of the adoption triad. So not just the adoptee, not just the foster adoptive parent, but also the biological parent as well. So I cannot recommend it enough. It is worth whatever money wherever money you can find. So yeah,
highly recommend it. So good.
All that to say, here's the quote with this idea. And this is talking about ambiguous loss, but they say this. So much of what happens in adoption and permanency is ambiguous. Ambiguous loss is an injury that occurs without closure. They continue by saying, for instance, adoptees have lost a whole family, but there are no bodies to bury, no graves to visit, no rituals to commemorate this loss. And in addition, what makes it difficult is that loss is that this loss is not recognized by larger society. Mm. And so, yeah, I want to get your thoughts on this idea of ambiguous loss.
Yeah.
And maybe in your experience as a professional, as a dad, how have these kiddos or the young people that we're working with filled in some of these gaps or tried to maybe find their own closure when some isn't easily available?
Yeah, I think the first thing as I read this quote, and it's such a, this is kind of a great representation of like this book, right? Because it just, it kind of slows you down and helps you to think more thoroughly through what is my adopted child experiencing through this or a likelihood. And it really kind of gives some great wording to that. And I think that that sense of loss, I know having written dozens of adoption home studies and watch judges pronounce like families, right? Even myself kind of going through that. There is this part of like, you think once you get to that point, you're like, okay, all right. Like we're a family and nothing's gonna kind of take that away. And there, I think sometimes there's like this hope that it's like, okay, now is kind of this joyful, happy, which there is some of that, right? Like it's a finality and like we have this family together, but there is such tremendous loss that you have to be intentional about and aware of to acknowledge, because I think a lot of times, like, I don't know about like in your experience, professionally, personally, whatever, right? Like the children will sometimes have experiences of loss, but they don't have words for it. Right. And so I think about even little ones that I've been around where eventually they'll kind of realize like, I'm wondering how my biological mother is doing.
Yeah.
And I find a lot of times this can come up in holidays, right? Like, so Halloween, we're all having fun, right? We're bouncing around, we're getting candy. And then all of a sudden it's like a little one or even like a youth or maybe even a teenager kind of gets an attitude sometimes. And I've literally found in all age groups where this has happened, where it's like, oh, you're thinking about a loss in that moment. I don't know. Is that familiar? Have you heard any about that in kind of your experiences?
First of all, I've never heard of a teenager having a bad attitude in any context. Right, so yeah. I don't know what that, that'll be another podcast, I'm sure.
Right.
No, I think there's something to that. Another quote that I pulled here from Seven Core Issues in Adoption Premise is the internal narrative may contain ghost relationships, air quoted there, created from remnants of information or experiences. And I think that, like, and that's why we call, you know, again, having fun close to Halloween, spooky time,
yeah,
living with these ghosts, trying to like answer some of those questions within that information gap or vacuum, a kiddo can dump a lot of hopes, dreams, desires.
Yeah.
They can fill in the gap with whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is. And I've never... And again, I think this is just parenting. At no point does a kid ever come up to you and be like, hey, Dad, in 20 minutes, I'm going to ask you some questions about my first family. Or, hey, next Thursday, can you pencil me in to where we can really unpack some of this, these gaps that I'm filling in? It's more of just like, oh, you're sitting outside of a curb dressed as Spider-Man, almost in tears, wondering what your first family's up to.
Yeah.
And And then there you go. Yeah. You're off to the races. Yeah. So,
and I think, right, like that is such a profound thing that one can be super frustrating as a parent. And I imagine all of you out there that are listening, right, if you have experience caring for foster children or you have your own adopted children, where it's like, I want this to be a happy time, a holiday, even Halloween, right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden they say something random that you're like, that felt so out of left field, right? Like the, I miss mama so-and-so or whatever, right? And you're just like, wow. And so you just think about that for a moment and the heaviness of that, that it like visits, right? All, in any time, all of the time. Mm-hmm. And so we see a lot of times with that, there's, children are going to try to be resilient and make sense of that. And so sometimes the way that they make sense of that is kind of creating a fantasy of the what that looks like or even what they're doing. And it really it's a coping skill because if you think about it, right, like I don't know if you've ever had an experience that was not resolved. I mean, we were talking earlier, even like movies, right? Like you watch a movie, you want a happy ending. Yeah. You want a resolution.
Or not even a happy, just ending.
It's just an ending. Could be fine. Right. Yeah. And there's like so many movies now where it's like, wait, is that it? Yeah. Did it end? Where's the resolution or where's kind of the conclusion? Yeah. And I think there's a lot of kids that's their life is they have a desire and it's a to be continued if I ever get that. And so to cope with it, they're like, well, let me think about something. I remember this one kid saying specifically in trick or treating, I fantasize about I'm going to knock on a door and it's going to be my biological parent. Wow. Right? Like this teenager that's going, you know, I'm going, hey, have you ever talked about that with your adoptive family? Yeah. No. But there's still this longing that's there that is kind of like this ghost because no one else sees it. And oftentimes the child's not going to talk about it because then it might be disappointing to the parent, right? But this is the thing with kids. And I think this is why it's so important to talk about the story, right? Because if you're living with a ghost from your past, the last thing you want to do is be alone with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Scary movies have taught us nothing. Don't ever be alone. Right?
Don't ever go into the woods alone. Yeah. Right. Don't go down in the basement alone.
Don't split up.
Right. Don't do it. Right. You're like, we know it's gonna take them out. Right. Yeah. Well, in the same way, right, I think about trust-based relational intervention, the idea of like sticking together. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's talk about it. Let's. And this is why for those of you out there, I think about like our adoption identity development class where it's really helping you kind of just get used to even talking about the adoption story or even just putting words to it. Mm-hmm. It's never too early to start that because it's like that cohesiveness, the ability to stick together, super helpful. Yeah. And so that's just one of the things I'll say, but let's talk about when children kind of do this fantasizing, right? Like, and they're retreating inwardly and they're making kind of oftentimes their own explanation with, whatever. They're just going, what feels good? What do I think about my biological family or what they're doing or why I'm not with them? Yeah. That, again, that's a coping skill, but I think the book talks about that a little bit more, right? As far as the challenges that can be faced with this, because I think one of the things is it's a great coping skill, but like any coping skill, if you rely on it too much, then it starts to become unhealthy, or we call it like an adaptation, where it's like a child's adapting to, I don't have this resolution. And so I'm going to make a story that feels like a resolution. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes I'm diving into that a lot. Yeah. And then I might even dive into that so much so that that tends to be my preferred reality. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's, if you've had any experience with that, but.
Yeah, I think that's really well put because, I think that even sometimes as an adoptive parent myself, like having a kiddo come up and say something like, oh, my first family did X, Y, and Z. And as a caregiver, you're like, nah, dog, that couldn't have happened. Right. Yeah. Like, I know, and yet, that's a trigger. That's a sign of a kiddo kind of filling in his own story. And and I pulled one more quote kind of here from this thing, and it speaks the 7 core issues in adoption and permanency. I apologize. It says this: the amount of time an individual is consumed with their fantasy or internal narratives and their consistent vigilance in scanning their environment, yearning to match their fantasy, may create social anxiety, boundary issues, and anxious attachments. Mm. And again, one of the things I appreciate about this work is that it pretty clearly and succinctly and in vocabulary that I understand, that makes a lot of sense, that a kid tells himself a story, starts believing in that story, and then is looking almost for like confirmation bias out in the world where, that must, if these things are true and then this is true over here, then my story that I'm telling myself makes sense. And that, I imagine, can impact a lot of a kid's ego, a sense of self, and I think having that rooted in facts, even if they're uncomfortable facts, or even if it's would be more fun to believe, my dad was Superman, it's an easier story to follow than maybe some of these other kind of realities that our kiddos might have been coming out of.
And I think it's interesting when you think about so every behavior, every action, right, is to meet some kind of need. Mm-hmm. So when a child is creating a fantasy, I think it's helpful as a caregiver to go, okay, what need are they meeting right now? What is it that they're resolving in creating this fantasy, right? And so I think that is where there's some great opportunity and effort and work for families to really support their children as they're dealing with kind of this fantasy piece.
And I think, that's where I would like to go. Okay. I think as a parent, give me some practicals, I think would be good. And maybe, and this is going off our script here a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, watch so, out. Yeah,
heads up. But what, and I'm thinking in two ways, like internally as a caregiver, but also externally as a caregiver.
Yeah.
Because I think those are two really important, but very different ways to process some of the things our kid says. So sometimes a kid might run up and say, hey, I wonder what my first family's doing. And you're in the middle of trick-or-treating or the holidays, Thanksgiving or whatever. And you're like, you almost take it personally. Am I not providing enough for you? Or like, am I not meeting a need? And on some level, we're not meeting a need.
Right.
And so do you have any tips or any advice or any ways to help maintain perspective in those? And I think that's going to be our next podcast. So don't give away all the answers.
But I
also don't want a parent to hear that and go like, I don't have any,
I don't
have any tools or skills or perspective to bring to that kind of internal regulation that's needed sometimes.
Yeah. And I think speaking directly to this topic, what helps the most is to first just understand like that it's not about us, right? There is a loss that is unresolved, because oftentimes we see where it's like this biological family is out there somewhere and they're wondering, I'm having such a good time. And it's interesting because it's like, we know from research, thinking about Bruce Perry and kind of his research on his team, right? Like, even if you've adopted a child that's like at early, right? 2 months old, right? And you're thinking, oh, they can't possibly have anything. But what, like, negative that is kind of they're holding with them. But it's so interesting, even looking at his research, that shows like even early life trauma or in utero trauma has paved neural pathways for them to kind of think a certain way. So it's like, this is going to go bad, or I'm having fun, and all of a sudden it's like, boom, I just went to anxiety, and my anxiety fills in the gap with loss and ambiguous loss, right? And so some of that is like even thinking about my children, and I'm going, I know that's going to happen, and it has nothing to do with me, but it has to do with the environment that they were kind of baking in utero and then early life trauma when they experience some neglect and different things like that. And so there's some of that. It's like, just be prepared. Be prepared in the same way that you're like, I bring water bottles when I'm going on a hike because I know my kid's going to get thirsty. Right. And so I think some of that helps me to go, they might do this. And honestly, if they're telling us about it, that's a really good sign because that means that they are wrestling with it. Because one of the things that we also see that is helps me at least is when my son or daughter gets sad because of something related to their adoption, that means they're wrestling with it, but they're not stuffing it down. They're not masking it with something fake. Yeah. They're going, I'm giving words to my feelings. Yeah. Like, what better health is that? And so I think it's one of those things that's like, if I keep reminding myself, it's not about me. This is healthy that they are wrestling with it right now. And so I have an opportunity to attune to that and be right with them, right? In the same way where it's like when my child's sad or if we have to be at a funeral or someone's mean to them at school, right? What's kind of the natural way a parent responds, right? They're attuned. Buddy, I'm so sorry. That stinks that that happens, right? Like in the same way, I think we can attune to their emotional experience with that. And how powerful can that be, right? Yeah. Like how powerful is it when dad or mom sees me and understands me and knows right in this moment, buddy, I see you. I feel it. I wish we could find out right now. And I think that's one of those things that the more that they feel seen, heard, and understood, it gives them resiliency to go, okay, this, there is loss, but I'm not alone. And so I would say that's the first thing for me, at least to help with regulation is like, I got to hold on to that.
Well, and I think that's before we jump to kind of the more practical, maybe some physical things that we can do kind of in our environment or in kind of the external part of meeting those kiddos' needs. I think, I think that's a really important point to remember of it's not necessarily about me. And I don't know, maybe I'm projecting, but like sometimes I feel like I need to have all the answers. One, that's probably ridiculous because there's no way you're going to have all the answers. Just not how life works. But I think being able to, like you said, sit with the kid, be able to hold their hand in that process, be present with them, do what you can to maybe help fill in some of those gaps with the truth. Like, I don't think you ever just ignore that, right? Like if a kid is asking the question, it's our job as caregivers or professionals or whoever to fill in, to answer those in age appropriate ways, developmentally appropriate ways for sure. So do what you can, but also understand that they might have questions that we'll never know the answers to. And our presence is just, we bring what we can when we can.
And I think even like it's okay to join them. I think a lot of times as parents, there's times where it's like, I have to be strong for my child and they need me to be strong. But it's like what I've often found in the therapy office as I'm providing therapy for trauma or attachment work is some of the most healing experiences is when the parent, although regulated, more regulated than a child, feels it deeply with the child in that moment. And it's one of those things that is so beautiful when you watch that and you see the child just melt into them because it's like, I'm seen yeah. right now. And I'm telling you, it's so therapeutic. It's awesome. And you can do that even on the side of a yeah. street. if you're able yeah. to kind of go, let me set down my agenda yeah. right now mm. and notice what you're experiencing in that moment.
Yeah.
So powerful.
That's awesome. So shifting gears just a little bit as we kind of try yeah. to land this thing. What are maybe some more practical or kind of external yeah. expressions of that attitude that we've been laying out? I know like in our work here with older kids seeking permanency and, yeah. and us walking with them, the life book has yeah. been an incredible tool. Yeah. I've heard memory boxes. I've heard of just yeah. different activities and things like that. But do you have any kind of tried and true ones that you would go to?
Yeah, there's this one that I use a lot that is a therapeutic life book. And in this therapeutic life book, it really is just kind of a written out. And it's something that as a therapist, I do with adoptive parents. And so we take time to really go, okay, let's wrestle with this. Without the child there, to really go, how do we tell this story? And what do we do with those parts that we don't have any information on for this child? That can we say that? Can we actually write it down? I don't know what happened to your father. Mm-hmm. I wish I did. But when you're ready, we have a name and we can look. Right. Like even putting that in a therapeutic yeah. life book to kind of validate some of that, I would say is one of the things that is so helpful is parents practice doing the work. And this is why I know at CFC, we oftentimes will practically say, no matter what age you mm-hmm. adopt at, even a baby, practice telling the story and working through that, because it's there's a lot of yeah. sadness and gut wrench yeah. and those kinds of things that I think as parents, we want to kind of be a little bit farther yeah. along in processing that. So there is a therapeutic life book that the TBRI people have used, the Trust-Based Relational Intervention by Karen Purvis yeah. Institute of Child Development. And so that's one of the things. We have other, oftentimes as therapists, we will create like a nightstand that has maybe a picture or maybe some type of stuffed animal or something that is easily accessible that the child can kind of go mm-hmm. to and, you know, comfort themselves mm-hmm. with. Right. And it's right there. And that's also the same thing with the therapeutic life book is that we write it out, we type it out, we kind of put it in some type of binder somewhere mm-hmm. so that it is again, accessible mm-hmm. and, a child can go and look at it, mm-hmm. access it if they want, or mm-hmm. they can, if they're not at a place where they can read, then the parents can kind of read it. And so I would say those two yeah. things that are yeah. things that we often use. Yeah. But I think also what is very powerful practically is make sure you're again, giving words and emotions about what's that like for you right now? What is that? I'm feeling sad that we don't know where your mom is right now. And so I think another thing is just giving voice to the emotions and feelings behind it, which is space, yeah. honestly, right? Like that's one of the most powerful things is space with that. But I think the other thing that we often do in, whether it's in therapy or even personally in my own family with adoptees is when they're missing some biological family, oftentimes what I will simply ask them is, if they were here right now, what would you say to them? Mm. And what would you want to give them? So a lot of times for my kids, they will go, I would give them a hug. Mm. And so what we do is I go, how about you give me the hug and we will ask God to give mama that hug. And so I'll go, give me that hug. Yeah. And as they're hugging, right, I go, God, would you please give this to so-and-so and let them know how much my little one loves them, yeah. right? And there's this honoring, deeply felt feeling of, God, please give this to them. Yeah. And God's with them and God's with us in that way. And I found that has been such a practical, nurturing way that meets them right where they're at in their emotion. Yeah. And they do feel connected in that way. So some of the practical things I've done.
Great. I'm not going to say anything more in that. So if you're interested in learning more.
Yeah.
Listeners, watchers on YouTube, check out familycarelearning.org. Check out arizonafamilycounseling.com.
Yeah.
Ooh, got the com on that one.
.com, yeah.
CFC's whole mission is strengthening families and serving at-risk kids. So we are here to help. We're here to support. Some specific classes to look for, if I wrote them down correctly, Parenting with Connection?
Yeah. Parenting with Connection talks a lot about attachment, right? And kind of goes into a deeper dive as far as like, where's my attachment style and connecting deeply with my child? Because I think there's a lot of that that influences how I connect with my child. And so as I know that, it really helps me to meet deeply with my child in their loss, in their joys and everything. Yeah. And so I think it's really practical and helpful from an attachment perspective, dealing with ambiguous loss.
Yeah.
And then
there's another one that's adoption identity development.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talk about in that one, how children process their adoption differently depending upon their developmental stages. And so a lot of times I know as a parent or as a case manager, you're like, we talked about this when you were 7 and we were good. And now you're 12 and now you hate the fact that you're adopted, you know? And so some of that is just so frustrating or right. Like as a parent, cause you're like, what in the world just happened to my child? Yeah. And so we kind of really want to empower you out there to really understand how this is a process that children kind of really work through throughout their development and how you can be kind of informed to do that.
Cool. Yeah. I think especially in some of those, like, learn and relearn some of those things.
Yep.
I think we can never get too good at attachments. We can never fully understand what our kids are thinking and going through. And so refreshing yourself often is great. But Brandon, thanks for jumping in with me. I'm a little disappointed you didn't wear like a Batman mask or whatever as we talked about this stuff. But I appreciate your insight. James, thanks for holding it down behind the scenes with the cameras and the mics and the editing and all that stuff. And thank you for listening. We'll be back to talk with you soon.